Blog Talk Radio.
5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
Welcome to the Dynamic Dojo with Rosita and Robert. It's January 12th, 2014, and we are broadcasting live from Seattle, Washington. Joining me on the helm today is, I almost called you Grandmaster Bob. I don't know what happened there. Super Robert Steele from Burbank, California, my esteemed brother in the martial arts and co-host. How you doing, Bob?
My friends now are going to be getting phone calls from some bozo in San Diego going, do you know Bob's claiming to be a grandmaster?
Yeah, and some equally weird bozo named Rosita tried to promote him to one. I don't know.
Right.
Oh, that was Rusty, so weird.
It was funny today, or yesterday, I posted something, I shared something posted by Christina Carter, Grandmaster Carter's wife, and it said, my favorite part of winter is watching it on TV from California.
Oh, geez. Okay. You guys down there with the weather, you know, I saw a picture of one of our other cool co-hosts. April Vidal, and she was in this group picture, and it was like, you know, bright sunshine, and everyone's wearing t-shirts, and I'm all like, I hate y'all.
But it wasn't as warm today as they thought it was going to be. It was only 75.
It was only 75. It was like 40.
God, that was a chair.
See, this is the world's smallest violin. Oh, it's only 75. Anyhow, okay, so our phone number here, folks, is 347-677-0699. At around 6:30, we're going to have Grandmaster Don Baird joining us and joining the discussion. So if you're listening, if you're a student of Grandmaster Baird's or a fan or a great friend, please don't go away. We've got a fun and informative first segment here, and it's only going to be about 30 minutes. So, you know, please stay tuned. Don't log out, because we've got like a bunch of people that are listed on our chat board right now. And for our listeners out there, if you don't know, there's a chat board right underneath the marquee. So if you've got the marquee up on your computer, just scroll down a little bit and you'll see a chat board. And we see all of you.
Hi.
Hi, everybody. So if any of you want to write in questions for Grandmaster Baird later or just want to join the discussion via chat, please do. Otherwise, call in later after 6:30, 347-677-0699. Somebody just logged out. I think that was you or me. I don't know. I think that was you, Bob. Guest number 6034 is logged out. Come on, don't go away. Jeez, people. Okay. So let's move on. Let's move on with the rest of the show. Let's get started with our birthdays of the week. Who do you have for birthdays on your end there, Sifu Bob?
Well, I have a master out of Burbank. He teaches at for Burbank Parks and Recs, Master Chris Kadamian. His birthday's today. Great boxing legend, champion, Joe Frazier, turns 70 years old today.
Right on.
Randy Williams, Sifu Randy Williams, Wing Chun Master. Timmy Prisk, his birthday is on the 14th. He was a student of Grandmaster Joe Miller. Our good friend of the show and good friend in real life, Lisa King out of Las Vegas. Her birthday is on the 14th. Jim Lazarga, one of Grandmaster Craig Carter's old students. His birthday is on the 15th. Master Burton Richardson, one of the JKD greats, his birthday is on the 15th. And I forgot one. One of our past guests, Maya Freeman, Maya the Trainer, on 114 turns another year older.
Right on. So, and for people out there that are interested in a more fitness-oriented radio show, Maya the Trainer Freeman has a blog talk radio show on the Doc Radio Network, and it's called Core Consciousness. Core Consciousness with Maya the Trainer. So for everyone out there that's having a birthday, here's that cool song for you. Everybody, all right, another year older. Now, I almost uploaded this really, really funny song for birthdays and stuff, but as I listened to it, I thought to myself, maybe I won't, because it has like these lyrics like that say something like, you haven't done anything worthwhile in your life yet, but you're getting another year older, and now you're all bent, and you know, it's like, what?
Oh, nice.
You reserve those comments
for me.
Yeah, that's true, but I'll just have to save it for your birthday. All right, well, let's go on to our shout-outs of the week. I want to start out by just announcing an upcoming seminar. The seminar is going to be hosted by Sifu Manuel Rodriguez, and the seminar is called comes from a category of seminars called the Earth Bending Classics of Toph, Southern Praying Mantis Kung Fu Seminar Tour. And this particular seminar is, I'm trying to see if there's any information about what is going to be taught, but I don't have any exact information, but it is going to be presenting Southern Praying Mantis Kung Fu, and is going to be taught by one of the choreographers for Toph Bei Fong in Avatar, The Last Airbender. And the seminar is going to be on January 25th and 26th, 2014. That's next weekend. And this is going to be at the Jeet Kune Do. This is going to be at Jeet Kune Do, Kansas City, at 13665 East 42nd Terrace, Suite H, Independent, Missouri. M-O is Missouri, right? Yeah. 64055. And for questions about the seminar, you can call 816-877-3020. And that's January 25th and 26th at Jeet Kune Do, Kansas City. Sifu Rodriguez will also be at Tiger Crane Kung Fu on February 8th. And that location is 1733 East Los Angeles Avenue in Simi Valley, 93065. The phone number there is 805-341-4696. If you don't want to call those schools, you can just email Sifu Manuel Rodriguez at Sifu Manuel, M-A-N-U-E-L, at yahoo.com. So there we go. A cool set of seminars for one of the choreographers of a character in The Last Airbender. All right. Do you have any events or shout-outs there, Sifu Bob?
Well, I do. You know, last night I was at the Honor Wall unveiling at the Martial Arts History Museum, and some great people there hooked up again with Alan Woodman, Michael Matsuda, Susan Jacarl. The big one of the night was Don and James Wilson, the Wilson brothers.
Right on.
Don Wilson has agreed to do our show, as you know.
Mm-hmm. Oh, we're really excited to have the dragon with us.
I am thrilled. He was telling.
Yes.
And every time you get around Don, he starts telling stories about about his fights, about it. It's really, he's a great guy. He's a wonderful human being. And next week at the Martial Arts History Museum, they are having a screening of the movie Gong Pao, Enter the Fist, with the person who starred in it, and he also wrote it, and he also produced it. He's going to be there, and I may, if I get close enough to him. Of course, last night I expected 100 people there, and there were only about maybe 30.
Wow.
If I get close enough to this guy, I will ask him if there's no publicist to go through, if he would be interested in doing the show.
I would love it if Steve Odekirk came and joined us on the show and tell us a little bit about how we filmed it. Because, I mean, that's a lot of hard work. A lot of it was green screen or blue screen. I forget which one. A lot of it was green screen. And having to, like, seamlessly plug yourself in to real old kung fu movies, I mean, that takes a lot. That takes a lot of work, and I'd really like to hear about the behind the scenes about it and to hear about his career as a comedian also. So I think it would be really, really cool. So let's hope for that. And we are hoping for Don the Dragon Wilson to possibly join us in a couple of weeks, so possibly the 26th of January. So keep tabs on the Dynamic Dojo Facebook page, folks, to see when Don the Dragon Wilson will be joining us on the show. All right. Is that it for your health news? Or your health news, your shout-outs?
That is.
Not health news.
I'm a grandmaster. I'm doing health news. Boy, wow.
Yeah, what right. I know, right? That's because I've got health news on the brain, I guess. Well, let's go ahead and do health news. All right. Now, this isn't so much health as it is more toward fitness and gaining your fitness goals, specifically gaining your fitness goals and getting good at something. So considering that this show is a lot about martial arts, I'd like to employ this particular article more toward the martial arts. So you know that saying, you know, Bob, you know, practice makes perfect. We've all heard that, right?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. But now there's new research out there from psychologists, namely from the University of Sheffield in the UK. And these studies suggest that when it comes to learning new skills, the way you practice is more important than the frequency. Now, I was always under the impression that you have to do something at least 10,000 times. You know, it's in the Tai Chi classics, you know, 10,000 times, you know, then you begin to understand, 20,000 times, then you begin to master, stuff like that. So this kind of goes against, like, the whole repetition thing, because a lot of people think that the more you repeat something, the more it, like, stimulates the neurons to do their thing, you know, and stuff like that. But now, this is what the people at the University of Sheffield found. Now, this particular research study is published in Psychological Science. Now, the research team there at the U.S. analyzed data from 854,064 players of an online computer game, and this game was called Axon. So you're probably wondering, well, what does this have to do with martial arts? Well, it doesn't really matter whether or not you're learning the rules and the skills of a video game and martial arts, because in the brain, you know, whether it's physical or whether it's like physical just with a, you know, keyboard or, you know, video game controller, it's the same thought process. So anyway, in this computer game, players are required to guide a neuron to different connections by clicking potential targets. And this was used to test participants' ability to move quickly, make decisions, and understanding how the game works. The study suggests that learning a new skill, such as playing a musical instrument, the way one practices is more important than the amount of time spent practicing. I can see where this can go awry with some of the weekend martial arts couch warriors out there. But we'll get into that here in a second. The researchers monitored the players' results by inserting a tracking code into each computer Now, this recorded the identity of each machine every time the game was loaded, and it tracked the participant's scores as well as the date and the time that they played the game. The investigators wanted to determine how game practice impacted the performance of the participants, and the results revealed that among participants who played the game for the same amount of time, some players registered higher scores. Okay. The research team say their findings suggest that individuals who were able to learn faster had spaced out their practice or had registered fluctuating results during early game performances. And that's a key here. During their early games, their scores had fluctuated a lot. So this indicated that these participants were analyzing how the game works, leading them to perform better. Now, talking to Dr. Tom Stafford of Medical News Today, he says, quote unquote, people who were inconsistent at the beginning of play performed much better later on. This was surprising, but our theory is that this inconsistency doesn't reflect flakiness. It reflects a willingness to explore the parameters of the game. But being unafraid to fail early on, you can gain the knowledge needed to support superior performance later on. So, in a nutshell, if we can work out how to learn more effectively, we can learn more things or the same things in less time. In an economy where we're all working for longer and longer, the ability to learn across the lifespan is increasingly important. So, interesting data there. Now, the investigators do note that collecting data from online gaming is effective in providing researchers with a new way to analyze how humans learn. This kind of data affords us to look in an unprecedented way at the shape of the learning curve, allowing us to explore how the way we practice helps or hinders learning, Dr. Stafford says. So, interesting. So, however, folks, like I said earlier, I don't want, like, people out there to think that they now have an excuse to practice less in their martial art. That's all we need is, you know, an excuse for people to, like, skip out on training and stuff like that, because it's all about how you practice. You know, I mean, we've all, as instructors, have met up with certain students that just assume that because they just show up every day that they should be this color belt or that color belt, you know, at any given time. I've had students like that, you know, where they just come to class, but they don't apply, right? You know, you've had students
right.
like that too, right? You know,
oh, yeah.
They just come to class and they just do the thing and they don't apply. They don't actively think, you know, inside and outside the box. You know, that's going to get you nowhere, you know? I mean, so anyhow.
Very true. Well, you know, one of our past guests, Kent mm-hmm. Turnipseed, told me in excess of 30 years ago, it's mm-hmm. not practice makes perfect. It's perfect practice makes perfect.
Exactly. Exactly. And, you know, and if there's anything out there that me personally that I want my students to learn is that, you know, I'm only there to kind of give them like a map, you know, here you go. This is where we're going. And here's a map. And I'm going to show you where all the roadblocks are. And I'm going to show you how to fix a flat tire along the way, you know, all that kind of junk. But you have to think, what happens if we get lost? And you have no GPS. That's how I explained it to my kids' class the other day. And they understood. They understood that they have to think. They can't just blindly follow me. And I said, if you want to get good at this, you know, think. You know, if you don't think something's going to work, ask me about it. I'm not going to be offended. And then let's explore it together and find out why it wouldn't work for you. But why is it working for Johnny over there? Let's do it. You know?
That's right. So, you know, anybody should never worry about offending you, because if I haven't offended you by now, you're not going to become offended.
That's true. So ask questions, students. Do ask questions. I mean, but, you know, don't – how do I put this? You know what I'm trying to say, Bob, right? Ask questions, but don't, you know – don't question either. I don't quite know how to put it. Don't be rude about it is pretty much what I'm saying. You know?
Right.
Yeah, don't be rude about it. All right. So let's go ahead and move on. Here we go. Well, let's do some weird news.
Weird news.
Well, we all know that networks are our lifeline now. Those are the Facebooks and the Twitters and the LinkedIn. All these are our umbilical cord of the world. Well,
right.
Weird news goes into it. Tigers seized from backyard in Arizona after man posts pictures online.
Oh.
Phoenix, Arizona wildlife officials have seized two tigers that were kept in backyards in the Phoenix area. The Arizona Game and Fish Department received reports December 27th about a man posting pictures of himself with his two pet tigers online. Game and Fish bloggist Randy Babb says the first tiger was found rope tied in a Phoenix backyard on New Year's Eve. The second tiger was located 3 days later in suburban Gilbert and was being kept in a large dog kennel. Both tigers are about 8 months old, 200 pounds, and appear to be in good health. Babb says they'll be taken to live at a wildlife preserve in Prescott. Officials say the animal's owner will be cited when he's located because Arizona prohibits the possession of wild carnivores.
Wow. Yeah. Wow, that's not too smart. And what else isn't smart is he rope tied a tiger to a tree.
Yeah.
Okay. As if the rope, you know, did he forget
that? Tiger would rip that tree out of the ground if they wanted to.
Yeah, or chewed out of the rope. I mean, what's up with that? Then you've got this tiger running around the neighborhood. That's crazy.
Oh, that's insane. Okay, this week's weird laws, and there's not too many of them, come out of South Africa.
Okay.
In South Africa, a license is required to purchase a television set.
What the hell?
What? Really?
Yeah. It's like, what kind of license is it? It's like a fishing license, I guess.
Okay.
In the days of apartheid, all people of color had to be indoors by 9 p.m., at which time a siren was sounded.
Oh, geez.
Wow.
Wow. That really sucks.
Actually funny. Oh, it does. Absolutely. But that was the time.
That was during apartheid. Yeah.
Young people wearing bathing suits are prohibited from sitting less than 12 inches apart.
Well, that sucks.
Oh, I wanted to bring up, I don't know if you saw the picture online, but somebody posted a picture online of some guy that just got the bejesus stomped out of him because the guy was a peeping Tom, decided to peep on a 15-year-old girl, and some father of the 15-year-old girl beat the crap out of this guy.
I saw that picture.
So bad.
I saw that picture. I was like, you know, if I were a parent and saw that too, I probably would have also. Now, people would have, you know, would say, you should have just called the police and waited for the police. Well, what if he had gotten away? What if? Then he would have, you know, he'd be coming back to peep again, or he'd peep somewhere else. You know, I probably would have beat the bejesus out of him too. You know,
But I'm not violent. I would have never done that. But I can say that they never would have found his body.
That's true. Yeah. You know, I mean, gosh, but it looks like the father must have, like, went to him with a baseball bat or something.
Doesn't
I mean,
it? Those were not from a fist.
Yeah,
unless he was a pro boxer.
Well, yeah, boxer or a martial artist. You know, I mean, I know some martial artists, other, you know, as well as you, that would completely annihilate this guy barehanded. In fact, I think anyone listening that is a martial artist would have annihilated this guy. Because, wow.
Oh, yeah. Most of my friends, this guy would have been unrecognizable.
Yeah, and that's it's sad that, you know, there are people out there with that bent to go out and, like, peep in people's windows and stuff like that. But, you know, at least he's caught.
That's
right. Go ahead.
And what's really, how is that? He gets the crappy out of him and arrested.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, good thing he didn't really try to do anything, because then the people in jail, you know, being a child molester at that point, you know, they would have, like, messed him up. Messed him up. Well, anyway, that was it for Bob.
Weird news.
All righty. I want to try something a little different today. So normally after Weird News, we've got the trivia question of the week. And it's a contest where, you know, if you're the first caller or first emailer, I guess, on the Dynamic Dojo Facebook page or on the chat board to come up with the correct answer to the trivia question, you get to be a guest co-host with us on an upcoming episode on Dynamic Dojo, or you can be a guest. Or bring on anyone you want. So, you know, it's kind of a cool little contest. But this time I want to try something different. I want to do a brain teaser this week. So this is kind of like a you are the detective type of thing. Okay, now we're going to start easy. I want to just start with something, you know, cool, easy, and kind of corny and stuff like that, just to see what kind of a response we get. So if you are the first person to put an answer on the Dynamic Dojo Facebook page or on our chat board, or even give us a call here at the studio, 347-677-0699, then you get your choice to be a co-host on an upcoming episode or to be a guest or to suggest a guest and bring them on and be a co-host for that. Okay, so detectives ready? Here we go. A man is found dead one Saturday morning. He was killed while his wife was sleeping. The wife tells the police all she knows. She says, well, the cook was cooking breakfast, the maid was cleaning, and the butler was getting the mail. The police immediately arrest the person who is responsible. Who is responsible and why? So go ahead and get your answer on the chat board, get your answer on the Dynamic Dojo Facebook page, or give us a call, 347-677-0699. We'll take calls up until the end of the show, which is 8 o'clock. So very cool. All right. Well, with that said, I think we should take a little break here. And when we come back, we are going to be talking to Grandmaster Don Baird. So we'll be right back after this.
Okay, so 5 tacos of cheese and a large soda, that's $10,012. Please drive around.
Wait, 10,000 what?
It's obvious you're buzzed and driving.
I've only had a few. I'm fine.
Yeah, the food's $12, but getting pulled over for buzz driving could cost you around $10,000 in fines, legal fees, and increased insurance rates. Please drive around. Actually, just park and come in.
Nothing kills a buzz like getting pulled over for buzz driving, because buzz driving is drunk driving. Brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration and the Ad Council.
Need to get some rest. This is the worst headache ever.
Right arm's all tingly all of a sudden. Must have slept on it last night.
I keep losing my balance. These old bones need some exercise.
Granddaddy, what you just said doesn't even make sense. It sounds like gibberish.
Signs like these could be more than what they seem. They could be a sign of stroke.
Sudden weakness or numbness of the face, arm, or leg.
Sudden trouble with vision in one or both eyes.
Sudden trouble walking or difficulty with balance.
Or a sudden intense headache that comes out of nowhere.
If you or someone you know has any of these symptoms, don't wait. Call 911 immediately. You could make a difference in someone's life, someone you love, maybe even your own.
Time lost is brain lost.
Find out more at powertoendstroke.org. Brought to you by the American Heart Association, American Stroke Association, and the Ad Council.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you can be the greatest, you can be the best, you can be the King Kong banging on your chest. You can beat the world, you can beat the war, you can talk to God, go banging on his door. You can throw your hands up, you can beat the clock, you can move a mountain, you can break rocks. You can be a master, don't wait for luck, dedicate yourself and you go find yourself.
Standing in the Hall of Fame,
yeah.
And the world's gonna know your name,
yeah.
Cause you fell with the cross flame,
yeah.
And the world's gonna know your name,
yeah.
And you'll be on the walls of the Hall of Fame.
You can go the distance, you can run the mile, you can walk straight through hell with a smile. You could be the hero, you can get the gold, breaking all the records they thought never could be broke.
Yeah, do it for your people, do it for your pride.
You're never gonna know if you never even try.
Do it for your country, do it for your name,
cause there's gonna be a day when you're
standing in the Hall of Fame,
yeah.
And the world's gonna know your name.
Dojo with Restita and Robert. Our phone number here is 347-677-0699. All righty, and I'm going to bring the mic over to Sifu Bob here, and Sifu Bob is going to introduce our special guest of the evening.
Okay, listen, Grandmaster Baird and I have run a lot into some of the same circles. I started actually with a school that he purchased from his grandmaster, Master Su. And I figured out, this made me feel really old when I realized that I started at the same school where Grandmaster Baird was 40 years ago. I started when I was 10, and I'm just about to turn 50. Please help me welcome a longtime martial artist, Grandmaster Don Baird, to the show. Welcome, Grandmaster Baird.
Hi, Bob. Hi, Rosita. How you doing?
We're doing great.
Thanks for joining us.
Thank you. Awesome.
Woo-hoo.
I'm glad to see that Bob is catching up on me with the age.
Yeah, he's going backwards. I'm going forward.
We're going to meet in the middle.
There you go. There you go. All right. So again, for our listeners, our phone number here is 347-677-0699. Feel free to call in if you have questions for Grandmaster Don Baird. So Grandmaster, me and Bob usually like to start the show by having our special guests tell our listeners a little bit about their martial arts background. So can you tell us about your beginnings in the martial arts?
The beginnings were back in 1962. I try not to mention dates like that because to the young folks that sounds like a long ways back. It could get pretty scary sounding, you know, but I started in judo and jiu-jitsu back in 1962. Mm. And I stayed in that until December of 1971 when I met Mr. Sa. And that's when I was going to transfer over to a little more dynamic martial art for self-defense.
Mm-hmm.
I found the judo was a terrific sport. It's got incredibly beautiful moves. Jiu-jitsu, just wonderful stuff. But I was getting to a point where I really wanted something very succinct, if you know what I mean, for
mm-hmm.
the street, for self-defense.
Mm-hmm.
And so I started on the search, and that's when I ran across Mr. Suh. And he had just gotten a little small school. He was in the Ford Motor Company in one of the bays with a bunch of mats and stuff when I first met him. And then he moved over to Olive in Burbank. And I walked to the door, and he came out of the office. And the very first thing that he said to me, "Ah, this guy, you want to become killer?"
And, wow.
That's awesome.
Now, you're looking at a guy that was in judo, you know, kind of the gentle way, a musician since he was four, and my first experience with anybody in the harder side of things, such as karate do or kung fu, was Mr. Sa with, "Do you want to become killer?" And I was stunned. I was like, wow, all right. I don't know if I want to be a killer or not, you know. So the second thing out of his mouth after I recovered from the first thing was choke my neck, you know, grab my neck. And I look at him and I go, man, this is a weird interview, you know. So I just said, what the heck, you know. I grabbed his neck, and next thing you know, I choked him. He did like 95 moves on me. I'm on the floor. He punches me in the chest, and I'm just laying there. He's never met me. He doesn't know who I am. I'm not a student. I haven't signed any California liability waivers. And this guy just throws me on the floor and drills me, and I'm in a suit.
Hear that, listeners?
Like,
that's old school right there.
There's no safety equipment, you know.
That's awesome.
So I told him, yeah, that's been a great interview. So I'll talk to you later. I'll think about it. And I left, you know. And I had to go eat lunch and try and figure out what all that meant. It felt very physical. And now I punch people for a living, you know. It's kind of funny. But took me a month or so to gather up another attempt at this, and I went back to meet him. And right then they were moving to 440 North Golden Mall, when the Burbank Mall was kind of a promenade. They cemented in the street, and that is a walkway with water fountains and stuff like that. So he had 440 North Golden Mall, which was a 5,002-story square foot building for judo, karate. It's just Korean kung fu, but you know, in Korea, karate and the kung fu kind of they kind of mix, they shuffle.
Mm-hmm.
And so I went in there and, you know, signed up, and off we went. The rest is history. I've never looked back. I train every single day. When I'm not in the hospital, I train more.
Mm-hmm.
I was in the hospital for 3 days. It kind of slowed me down, but you know, I train, and I love what he taught me. Extremely physical, a Rock Army a presidential bodyguard. He's part of the teaching team of the Rock Army Guards, and just extremely physical, extremely old school, philosophical, hard hitting, hard throwing, no excuse guy, and that fit my need perfect.
That's awesome. Very awesome. You want to be killer?
It was awesome.
You want to be killer?
I got to tell you, I turned seven shades of white, you know? It was unbelievable.
Oh, my goodness.
Oh, man. I'm laying
man.
On the floor in a suit, you know?
Wow.
Wow.
That's, you know, that's like, you know, kung fu movie type of stuff.
Oh, yeah.
You know, that's like
it was
so...
It was
cool. I can only
he
wish.
He was classic. Yeah, he was classic. Everything about him was very dynamic and just classic, and his forms were, they weren't for wusses and stuff. These were powerful forms where he didn't care if he won a tournament or not. They were forms that if you walked in the way of him, you'd be mowed down like he was a rhino. And he was powerful and aggressive, and he tossed you around. He threw you around a lot. He punched you a lot, and you grew. You got hardy. You either got hardy or he just separated you. You got hardy or you quit.
Wow. Now, these were the days where, you know, martial arts still in the public eye were sort of like that exotic, you know, from the Far East type of thing, right? So were there many people at the time, in California that were doing martial arts? I mean, now there is. I mean, there's lots of martial arts schools down there. But, you know, at that time,
like 40 schools in Burbank.
Yeah. I think Bob took me to every one of them.
they're all there. And people train a couple of years and they get about black belt, and next thing you know, they're professional teaching down the street from you. And it's odd, but I have no complaints. We all are just trying to make our lives, you know, dynamic. And so everybody's got to follow their dream, you know, but there's a lot of schools. But at that time, there was like, I think he was the only one in the Valley probably. And he'd be definitely the only one in Burbank. And, I think his buddy, Young Park, it was in Pasadena, and maybe Young Kim way back, another buddy of his from Korea was up in, like on Western somewhere in Hollywood. And then there was a Temple guy over on Sunset somewhere. There wasn't very many. But there was a billboard. There's a billboard. I just remembered it. This billboard said $99, 3 months to black belt.
Wow.
I say, wow. Maybe I should go there. I could get tough really fast, you know.
Really fast. For only $99.
It's $99. This is back in the day. That was actually, $33 a month. So it was kind of, the going rate. But it was a 9 month promise to black belt. And, I forgot to name the studio, otherwise I'd out him right here on the radio. I don't mind. I don't mind at all.
Our show is known for that.
No problem. Yeah, it's this guy, $99. You know, it's like it reminds you of those Muscle Beach things, you know, $99 from weekend to strong guy. And So I saw that billboard when I was looking for the school. So, but I ran across Mr. Saw, and that first meeting, I've never forgotten. My bones never forgot it. My soul has never forgot it, and my next 40 lifetimes have not forgotten it.
Wow!
So I signed up with him, and never looked back. And then when he retired, then I didn't buy the school. Actually, he gave me the school, and he continued to teach me over lunch. For the next 10 years, we met for lunches, and sometimes in the parking lot where we parked, he would teach me certain things. If it was a physical thing he wanted me to work on. So we kept that going to like the middle 80s. And by then he was so busy because his goal was to come here in poverty, which he did, you know, and be a billionaire. He told me one time, I just want to own hotels, sit back, collect money. Relax, spend money. He passed away October 30th of 2013. Mm. Just a really rough deal and very quick in the end. But it was a very marked day because he indeed owned hotels, lived in a beautiful home, and was sitting back and he collected money, paid bills, took care of his kids. Terrific, terrific guy with his family and his commitment toward the family. That's all he talked about when I worked for him and worked with him is his family. And he set up these goals from 25 to 30 and 35 to 40 and 45 to 50. And he's got to reach each one of these goals. And he did. He died owning the hotels, collecting money. And he was persistent, just persistent, a true warrior.
That's so cool. Yeah, I mean, it's like, so it's, cool. we're really glad that you're carrying on Master Su's legacy. Now, are you right now the only one in the area that is teaching his method?
Yes. We have some other students of mine who are teaching. There are no students that I'm aware of that are, there is no, Mr. Sub promoted three people to master. There was Larry Yarber, Louis Vega, and myself. And the two other masters do not teach. I'm the only master that teaches, and I've been the senior master and Mr. Sub's senior student for 25 years.
Wow.
So I have students who
are
teaching,
amazing.
And we have a couple of schools in Valencia and one in Whittier, a couple of schools in Colorado, and one back in Racine, and we have one in Oregon. So we have a few schools of my students that are teaching, and it's really terrific to see this incredible system that he developed and passed on continue. Even you know, in particular, past myself as well. There's another generation.
Mm-hmm. Yes, because you know, without you, the system would be gone. And you know, we're really glad.
Absolutely.
me and Bob are really glad that you're passing on that legacy. It's quite an honor and quite an undertaking too, I would imagine. You know,
it's immense. Yeah.
Yeah, man.
He was a very deep and rich teacher, you know. So you had the Qigong breathing exercises, the meditations. You had philosophy you had to study. You had all the grappling techniques, standing as well as on the ground. You had, 39 forms you had to learn. 72 derivative animal techniques from the Shaolin style. And which is an interesting story because, which I won't go into. It's kind of lengthy, but... We're from the Changmu of Korea, which became the Kondokwan, mm-hmm. and we recently renamed it Sudokwan after him. But it has animal techniques from the temple from Shaolin as well as Wudong Temple.
Very cool.
It's always been a mystery. Yeah, it's very, very cool, and it's always been a mystery. And he died with the mystery as to exactly where. Because I know everything about his training, except where did these techniques come from exactly? I'm not sure. And it's been unbelievable because these are the techniques we took on the tournament circuit.
Mm-hmm.
These are the techniques that made 12 fighters 12 champions.
Mm-hmm.
And you could spot them because it looked like Kung Fu. It looked like they trained. It is an authentic technique. It isn't, and I'm not saying anything. There's different takes and philosophies, and I admire them all. But it's not a be first attitude. It's a trapping attitude. It's a defense mind. Getting the person, trapping the person into an awkward place where you can score on them easily. And it's just amazing how powerful the system is that he's developed within the system that he was teaching, that he learned from Young Park, Chilhi Park, sorry. Yeah.
Wow.
So, interesting.
Amazing.
Yeah.
It is. Mm-hmm. It is interesting.
It's
I always
job.
Like hearing. Yeah, I'll bet because, mm-hmm. you know, not only are you the torchbearer for, you know, for the whole system and having to pass on, you know, the technique so that way they don't get lost cuz like, you know, I shouldn't say so many, but there are arts out there that, you know, come from a system and then somewhere down its evolution, it loses the original flavor. And it's always so great to meet up with masters that can evolve yet keep that same, you know, old school, so to speak. I don't know how to put it, but
right I think you
on.
Said it perfect. Yeah, you want to evolve, and you want to keep the old school as your footing. It's real important to keep your footing because if you lose your bearing, then the techniques start to drift from their theory. And if they drift from their theory, then you don't have anything supporting the technique. And if you don't have any reason, any support of the technique in terms of theory, it's going to fail you.
Exactly.
That very cool.
That you need
so
that old
cool.
school.
Definitely. Yeah. All right, Bob. Sorry for hogging the mic there.
I'm so used to that.
Sorry. I'm just like, oh, cool. And I just like had more questions. And okay, so mic's on Bob now. Here you go, Bob.
Well, you know,
I know you've got a lot.
I do, and some of your students are going to hate me for it because I know some things about you that they've never been told before. But I've actually seen, you can really tell Grandmaster students by the respect that they have.
Mm-hmm.
I nominated and inducted him into the Masters Hall of Fame in 2009. There was, mm-hmm. in fact, he's listening right now. Master Steve Pisa was sitting on my right. Master Baird was sitting on my left. I could not even pour myself a cup of coffee.
That's right.
Mm-hmm.
He was
mm-hmm.
right there and grabbed the pot from me. Now, remember him mentioning that he when he's out of the hospital, he trains a lot more?
Mm-hmm.
I told
mm-hmm.
the story, Rusty. You know, mm-hmm. everybody – Master Baird is so used to everybody treating him a certain way, yes, Grandmaster, no, Grandmaster. Then, well, there's – right?
There's
well,
mm-hmm.
I heard a story from one of his
uh-oh.
Students, Josh Lieberman, where he was going through some health issues, and he decided – having some health issues, he'd do something like go put on his gloves and go round robin with everybody. He was having a stroke.
Right. Right.
It sounds funny today.
I called him up and I wanted to find out how he was. And then I said, what in the F is wrong with you? I used to think he was smart. And his wife is laughing in the background.
Yeah.
His wife's going, yeah, he's right. He's right.
Well, you know, yeah. what better
in
you know, if you're going to go.
In all fairness, Bob, I figured it this way. I knew something was wrong when my right leg and my right arm and wasn't working right and I couldn't really talk. I knew something was wrong. For me, it's like go home, sit in a chair, and have some anomaly paralyze me the rest of my life, or go out and fight my students and just put God and put my body to the test. You know, just go for it. So and I wasn't quite sure because I'd had a major surgery because of a birth defect in my arteries, and they gave me certain feelings, and this was similar to that. And but this got a little more serious as I was training. But, yeah, we had like 13 black tiger black belts in a row, and I fought them through the line 3 times. And when I was having a stroke, as it turned out, they did an MRI of my brain. They go, I had a stroke in the thalamus. It was an oddity with a blood pressure spike. It wasn't from the arteries. It was just a kind of spike, and it just happened to cause a small bleed up there in the thalamus. It was not good. That was not good. But in fairness, I am the kind that is very, very difficult to put down. I will come back with one leg and one arm. I will stand back up if I have to ask 5 people to stand me up so I can finish the fight. I'm going to do it. And if I was going to go down, I may have been hard on my students, and maybe it was selfish, but gosh darn it, after all these years, training since 1962, I'm going to go down in my school.
Mm-hmm.
That was my point. If I'm going to die, I'm going to do it what I love. And I love my students. Sorry for the burden. I'm a selfish old master, but I'm going to drop in my school, and you can deal with it later because I'm going to be gone.
Amen. Amen.
I have to comment on that. He said he's never hard on his students. I have seen an evolution throughout the years that I dispute that point that you just made. I have seen it. Now, Diana, the one I love standing next to because I feel like Shaq, she's listening right now, and I remember coming into your school 30 years ago, and you were not this way. Remember, Diana? Remember that? Your wife may remember that part of you, but they don't.
I don't remember a thing. What are you talking about, bud?
You know, Bob,
are you bringing? What? Bob, you're going to bring up the arcade, right? You're going to bring up, yeah, I see where you're going.
You did.
That was my next thing. Rusty, I worked at an arcade on Magnolia just down from where I live now, and this younger guy with very long hair comes to my arcade looking for somebody, looking to kick the crap out of him.
Mm-hmm.
Him and somebody else, and it was Master Barrett.
Oh. I was just kidding, you know, I was just fooling.
yeah, don't you believe it. Well, Master Barrett, you were a technical advisor to the Burbank Police Department and the only unsworn non-gun carrying police officer. Tell us about those years. Tell us about the journey you took with the Burbank Police.
Yeah, that was pretty challenging. A lot of good guys, a lot of good officers I got an opportunity to work with there. But I realized that they had a training department and they were training as much as they could. But as much as they could is still only once or twice a year for just a few hours. So you can imagine a dentist becoming a police officer and getting 4 hours of training in 1 year. And that's the person that's going to put their hands on you if you're going to resist. I just didn't see how that worked. Criminals are putting their hands on people every day. Our police officers have no experience, no skill. These street guys, they're black belts in a way in their own kind of styles. So when I realized that, I just said, you know what, I'm going to invent these badge classes, and that's what I did. And so we pepped up the police department. We got almost all of the uniform cops to go through the badge classes. We had a bunch of them, and I taught them on a regular basis. I teach them for 6 straight weeks and take a break. Then I teach another 6 weeks for more police officers to take a break. And I'd offer things, ideas that they could do in roll call if they wanted to, so they could keep their skills a little bit better. And then I was supposed to, in 6 months, write a report, which I did. It was 18 pages on how to develop a more effective program for handling violent offenders. And then I'm talking about fisticuff fellows, not people shooting you. They were very well trained for that kind of encounter. But the in-between stuff, from an FI to hands-on, they needed a lot more training. So I offered that to the department. Eventually the chief came down and watched. And they made an offer to me, which was the most unusual offer in the world. They gave me a badge, a soft cover uniform, ID, a gratuitous vest, and put me in a car with another officer. And my job was to be called, to take the calls that go to violence or, disputes or anything like that, and see how they handle it, see how the officers handle it, offer advice if necessary. But they know what the idea was not for me to necessarily get in the way, but I wasn't going to let an officer get killed either. So it was a really precarious place to be because I'm not sworn, I'm a civilian. And the bad news was, the reason I did this in the first place is because, like all departments, as far as I'm concerned, and I will stand up and say it in front of God today, police departments are underfunded for training. They're inadequately trained, and it's the city's problems and fault, and I wanted to do something about it. They weren't going to pay me. Mm-hmm. There was nothing to pay anybody. So I told them, I says, well, I never offered this for money. And they go, what? I didn't offer this for money. I don't want $50,000 a year. I don't want $100,000 a year. I don't want advisors' fees. Nothing. So when I was out there in the field, if I hit somebody, in a way, the liability is on the city. But it's kind of precarious because they're not going to cover me because I'm not an employee. Mm-hmm. So the liability was also on me. So I put an incredible amount at stake there. And And, of course, I was also a target because I had a badge on. And, you know, nobody knows I'm not carrying a gun. They're going to shoot me right along with everybody else. So every time I went out, it was, for me, it was like a triple exciting night because there was so many options of things that could happen mm-hmm. to me.
Yeah.
So, yeah, we had a lot of interesting encounters. I demonstrated a lot of things for the department. It turned out that Henry Romero at the Sheriff's Department came up to my school, and I became a store for him, and he'd pick up techniques from me, and he taught some of those to the Sheriff Training Department, and it kind of spread out. My influence and technique and concepts spread out, and eventually I taught at the California Force Instructors meeting. I got invited for that and tried to spread out some of the ideas, made a couple of DVDs at Intai Kung Fu's request. And so it was really, really interesting. But I didn't stay with that. It wasn't something I really wanted to hang around. There's a lot of politics in police departments.
Ah, very cool.
Now, speaking of the police department, I heard that you were credited for saving the life of Officer Scott Sabatini, and you received a commendation for that. I was wondering if you could tell us about that event.
Yeah, you know, I'm gonna try and write that a little clearer on the website because I think that people can take it two different ways. What I meant is that in designing techniques for the department, there was a particular technique that one day Sabatini used, and it was an incredibly dangerous situation. And so he commended me, and the department commended me, Chief Dave Newsham. Called a hard copy. They sent a hard copy up for my jacket. That's what I was told by Sabatini and the chief. So for the technique that I had given Sabatini. So I didn't jump in front of a bullet or something like that, you know. But it's not that I wouldn't. I am that person. I will get in the middle of anything like that. I will not let people get harmed if I can do anything about it. But it was a technique, and it was against three gangsters at 3 o'clock in a park, and he found one of them armed, and it turned south immediately. And there's a technique that I had just given them, actually. He had just been in a class, God, just maybe a month earlier, one of my badge classes, got the technique, turned around and used it, and gave me the commendation for saving his life. It's a very nice gesture on his part. A little overstated,
awesome.
Maybe not, because if you didn't know the technique, there was no question in anybody's minds that when we drove up to that, they were going to kill him.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
There was no question about it. They were all armed, and they had to go down through it very carefully when his backup got there.
Wow. Now,
Scott's a great guy, too. Good police officer.
Well, that's it's a testament not only to your teaching but for his ability to recreate the technique under duress.
Under duress. That's exactly right. It's one thing learning the technique, but now go do it somewhere when you're in trouble.
Right. You know,
that's
it's
hard.
Like wow, it is. Mm-hmm. Oh my goodness. Mm-hmm. Like there was just one time where I had a gun pointed at me. I was robbed while I was in my car, and I was like, pardon my French, I shit a brick, and you know, it doesn't matter how, pardon my French.
The reason I laughed is because I break bricks, so I'm even nervous. Wow. Okay, I gotta watch what I'm chopping in the future.
Oh
man, Bob.
Wow.
Yeah, I completely I crapped myself because, you know, there was that one point in time where, you know, you're under that stress and the adrenaline's going and you're like, now what the hell do I do now? And I'm in a car. I'm in the driver's seat. Do I drive?
Man.
Can I outrun a bullet? What do I do? And, you know, when you don't, you know, unless you can keep that sense of, like, you know, calm and kind of like that a matter of fact mindset like Officer Sabatini did, then things would go south real quick.
Real fast.
And, oh, my gosh. So, wow, kudos to you and kudos to him for that. That's incredible. So, hey, it looks like we've got a question from the chat board. This question, and I'm just going to go ahead and call him out. Master Steve actually suggested this. He's like, he writes, can you tell us a bit about your meeting with Chuck Norris?
Well, I met him a couple of times briefly. He used to, back in the old days, he showed up at tournaments still. And then there was a time where I was a guest a panelist on the Black Belt board. And so Black Belts there of his style would test. And that's back in the old days. I don't believe that he was running the school at the time. I'm not quite sure because that school transitioned and had different leadership off and on. But Chuck would drop around the school, and so I was a guest counselor for their tests. But the most interesting time that I met him was when he had a night, and they invited me to the night, and he and his brother were there, and he was going to introduce his new style. So this is when he broke from the tradition that he had learned, the Tang Sudo forms and things that he had learned in Korea the year he was there. He redesigned forms, and he redesigned some concepts. He created some different theories. It looked to me like he was adding, a lot of the old forms don't have kicks because they didn't kick much. It was too dangerous with all the weapons and uniforms they were wearing, to try. They couldn't do high kicks, if you go back and look at the combat uniforms of the military. But his forms, he got kicks in them, and they evolved into something more modern, more like what was going on in the tournaments. You weren't seeing just hands. You were seeing a lot of spinning back kicks and, double flip roundhouses and jump kicks, and his forms are starting to represent that. So that was really a really enjoyable night because we were there for maybe 2.5 hours, 3 hours. All of the forms that he designed were demonstrated by him and Aaron. And by the way, Aaron is a terrific martial artist, just a natural. And I didn't realize that until that night. I never met him until then, and he's natural. I mean, it didn't matter which direction he wanted to kick. He could kick anywhere. Mm-hmm. He had a lot of skill. So that was a really there's a few interesting meetings. The very first one I met him was very brief at a tournament, and then a little longer when he showed up for a panel. But the lengthy one, a real enjoyable one, where you get the spirit of his kindness and his heart and his kind of a little bit about his soul. That was really, really fun. That was nice. It's a good
very
guy.
Very cool.
And very, very sincere, very, very straightforward. He knew what he was going after. It doesn't matter whether we agree on martial art techniques or should you make a new system or should you stick with the traditional and just grow with it. It's not about that. It's about, he's a terrific leader within martial arts.
Very cool. There's another question here on the chat board, and I have no idea. I have no idea what this means, but it just says Michael Jackson. That's all.
Michael Jackson.
Michael Jackson. That's all it says, and I have no idea what it means.
Well. That's cool, but I have to break a promise to Bob because I said every subject is fair game, but I can't comment on that. But I do know what
it
means.
Okay. Ah, cool.
Okay. Very good.
All right.
I'm very, very sorry. I just can't comment on that.
No, that's fine. I mean, that would if someone says no, don't tell anyone, then you don't want to tell anyone. So sorry, Master Steve.
I chit chatted with advanced students here and there, and we have a little chit chat, and I tell a little story, but they didn't really mind that, but it really isn't it's something that I'm comfortable with just putting out there. I don't know who's listening and
okay.
stuff, and I don't want to create a bunch of rumors, but a great experience there, and we can leave it at that.
Very cool. Very cool.
Oh, very cool. Very cool. Well, you're an accomplished musician. You've been on, you know, studio tracks, soundtracks. You play the clarinet, piano. You write poetry. You've authored books, and you're also an accomplished photographer. Tell us about that side of you, the creative side.
I was born with it, which was really helpful because there's a creative force within me that somehow got tickled either at birth or shortly after that in some way really doesn't mind what it pursues. As long as it's creative, as long as I'm really passionate about it, I enjoy it, I just follow it the best I possibly can. I try and find the best mentor. I'm the world's, this sounds wrong, but I'm just going to state it. I'm the world's best student because never, ever fight with my instructor. I never criticize my instructors. I never argue with the instructor. I always did what they said, period. They want me to photograph this way? I did. They want me to punch this way? I did. I don't question anything. Everybody knows that about me. When I was taking clarinet lessons at the conservatory, he said, do this. I said, fine. Then I go to another teacher who's a master clarinetist, one of the best in the world, and he had a little different take on something. He said, yeah, let's try it this way. I said, great. I didn't ever say, well, my last teacher showed me this way. So I had three things. One, I had a creative drive. Two, I was passionate about these things I came across I wanted to do. And three, I am the student of all students. I am today. I tell everyone in my school that I'm a student of my own teaching. And I invite everybody to follow me along because I'm the only student I'm going to continue teaching, and I'm sure I'm going to say something to me that you need to hear.
Very cool.
Wow.
I like that. I am the student of my own teaching. That's awesome.
Yeah.
That's
yeah,
totally
I
awesome.
Am. You know, I hear myself talk, and I hear myself quoting Mr. Sue, or I hear myself tell somebody about photography or a little something about clarinet, and I go like, oh, I just got an idea, and I'm back. I'm looking at it again myself, and then I pass that to the students, and I just keep growing right along with my students. I don't wear a belt in the school. I don't show a million certificates in the school. I have them from the International Kung Fu Association, the Chinese Martial Arts Association, my instructor, different areas. None of them are there. I teach in civilian clothes because I want to remind everyone that I don't even qualify for a uniform.
Mm-hmm.
I am the newest beginner at all times. And if
Very
we keep
cool.
that attitude, you know, then our lessons remain, you know, sincere because we have to step up from being the beginner to being the master in that class and being the student at the same time.
Mm-hmm. That's very cool. That's that can be hard to do, you know. It's like...
You know, once you kind of get used to it, it's easy. And I'll tell you why, because serving is the key word. I served mm-hmm. my students, and I served my teacher. I wasn't afraid of a cult. I wasn't afraid of Mr. Sue being a cult or some weird thing, you know. I can protect myself against that. I wasn't worried about that. As a mature guy, been in judo, jiu-jitsu, you know, as a graduate of University of UCLA, I wasn't worried about a cult. Teach me anything you want. I would serve him. And that doesn't mean that I washed his car, although I would have. He never asked.
Mm-hmm.
But I did clean the school. So if he said punch like this, I knew what I was supposed to do. And then when my students show up, I go, oh, my gosh, I thought there would be a day I was going to be the leader. I was going to be the master. But
mm-hmm.
I found out that actually I continue to serve my students once again. I continue to be the servant again. So when he was teaching me, I was serving. And as I teach, I'm still serving. And so I just keep track of one word. I have the perspective. And then whenever I say something that doesn't sound like I'm serving, then I admonish myself later on and go like, you know, don't get cocky. Keep humble. You know what you're doing. You're well-trained. but you're still serving.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what really helps. You know, you go get piano lessons. Serve the best interest of your teacher. That'll serve you, which is your main goal, is to serve you in the end. And if you serve yourself well, you'll be terrific at anything that you have passion for.
Mm-hmm.
And if you don't serve yourself well, you will not.
Incredible advice. And I hope anyone out there listening, even if you're not Grandmaster Baird students, I hope my students are listening. You know, serve, you know, continue to serve. And
serve.
Continue to serve no matter what.
We have three things to serve. We serve the teacher, we serve the students, and in the end, we serve ourselves.
Mm-hmm.
And we'll never serve ourselves any better than we served our teacher and students.
Mm-hmm. That's incredible advice. Incredible advice. And I hope I hope anyone out there that is learning martial arts understands and takes that advice to heart. Because, you know, I mean, me and Bob, you know, I know Bob has. We've all seen, you know, the masters, quote unquote, out there that you know, that demand, you know, the respect and this and that and the other, and they forget that they're still serving, and they expect others to serve them, and then, you know, and then you wonder why those styles don't, you know, lose their roots. And
there's a real big problem with some of that. Yeah. Because, mm-hmm. you know, I was a master by rank from two different organizations. Mr. So's my organization. That's the one that I really look to, you know. And I was a master by him 13 years before I finally allowed anyone to call me Master Don or Master D or Master Baird.
Mm-hmm.
13 years. I was a master, and my students called me Don. And it's really, you know, because, you know, you go from your one stripe to the next. Did you really transition when you got that stripe to the next, that moment?
Mm-hmm.
Did it happen? They wave a wand, they hand you a belt, and now you're a master.
Mm.
And I see all the work leading to it, but I see all the work following it. And both sides of that, the before and after, is what builds a master. And I just trained. I don't care what people call me today. I don't care what they called me then. Some things have been called not as nice as others. I got to watch out for Bob here and there, you know. By 1993, I walked into the school, and over my office door was a sign that said Master Baird. I didn't know anything about this. It just happened. And students just said, I looked at it and go, that makes me really uncomfortable. And they said, well, that's just how it's going to be. And so the students and I kind of had a little head-to-head because I like just being called Don. You know, it's like you have a master auto mechanic, he's George, and I'm a master martial artist, I'm Don. I'm okay with that. But, you know, there's this history in martial arts, and there's these old school thinkers, and I really admire that. And so we kind of argued back and forth for a few weeks, and finally I agreed. I said, okay, I'll tell you what, call me Master D. So for years, 5, 6, 7 years, everybody called me Master D. And then one day I came in, and everybody's calling me Master Baird again. I go, all right, what happened to me? Many guys, Master D, I'm losing track of who I am, you know? They said, you're not going to be Master D. Nobody's going to use that. And I go, oh, man. I said, all right, Master Baird. And fine. But then I'm not going to wear a uniform. So I was already not wearing a uniform most of the time, but that ended it. I will not wear a uniform when I teach. And with 50 stripes on my belt, I'm not going to do it, you know. And so I made a full-time effort of teaching them civilian clothes, and I do today. And so that's how I get back at my students. at my rebellion of being this master thing, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But I
well,
respect
Mar-
it. I greatly
well,
appreciate
Don, Maria,
it. But,
Maria just
know.
Wrote that one day we pretty much just said, we're calling you master now.
That's true.
And,
Steve was like an orange belt at the time or something. It was early on. He barely signed up when we changed the name to Pyongyang-do. And it was really, really, really fun. Next thing you know, he was already in the mix of the politics trying to get me to be called master. He didn't like it. He's like, no, this doesn't compete. He loves Kung Fu Theater. And actually, my wife does, too. She gets a kick out of that stuff. We sit here and watch this stuff, you know, the dub stuff, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And it's all, you know, my karate is better than your kung fu. And your lips don't match, and it's master this and
yeah.
see that. And so, you know, he got in it, and other students got in it, and they created, like, this coup. And next thing you know, I'm Master Baird. But I have a couple of relentless, hardy students that still call me Master D, but there's like three of them, you know, it's pretty much now it's PGMB, and don't ask me about that. There's no such thing as a premier rank in our style. It doesn't premier doesn't exist. It's just Grandmaster Baird, you know. I made the rank, and I got uncomfortable in that kind of be Grandmaster D, so it starts over. Okay, Grandmaster D, right? So all right, I'm gonna wear boots now, so I'm not a grand. You know. I'm going to try and change something. So I lost that, and they call me Grandmaster Baird. Then the next thing you know is, like, this premier. I go, what does that mean? There is no such thing as premier. It doesn't exist in our style. It would be some sort of honorary thing, or maybe, you know, if I made a bunch of grandmasters in our style, maybe that you'd want to differentiate made for them, but we really don't do that. Grandmaster So is Grandmaster Sue. I didn't call him double premier squared. It's really funny.
Oh, right on.
I love him. I love Master Stern. I love his family. I had a great time with him. And him, he punched the crap out of me. But I didn't have any extra names for him. But so I walk in one day, now this extra name, Premier Grandmaster Don Baird. And I had a feeling who the culprit might be, you know, this jovial guy, you know, this character and a couple other students. And I didn't really research it much, but I have my hunch that he's probably listening right now. But then the next thing you know, everybody's just, they just write me emails, PGMB. They you know, I don't have a name now. I'm just initials. Every correspondence is PGMB. This could be anybody.
Right.
PB&J, PGMB.
Right.
OMG.
It's funny. I'm waiting until I get older because I want to know what my next name is going to be. I'm excited to finally walk into school and get a new name that's going to be, you know, PGMB to the third power or something. It's awesome. I'm ready.
Steve is on the chat board, and he wrote, quote unquote, when I first walked through the door, he said, call me Don. And I said, are you the master? And he said, yes.
Yeah.
And from then on, I called him Master Baird.
That's true. That's because he's behind this. It's his fault.
I hear that, Master Steve. It's all you.
It's all you, Master Steve.
He's my primary suspect for the PGMB, too. So I have that in mind. So, you know, we'll find out one day. But there's always something in store. And, you know, it's one day I'll walk in, I don't know, one of the Christmas parties or something, and the students made this scroll that was on. It's on, you know, canvas.
Mm-hmm.
It's beautiful. It's signed by my most advanced students. And it was, you know, we don't have degrees past ninth, but it was like an honorary 10th, just mm-hmm. recognition for what I've done in the community and everything. And so they're always doing stuff to me and for me and around me. And I get the biggest kick out of it. My heart cherishes it. It's fun. It's funny stuff. But, you know, I teach in civilian clothes. That's what's important. I won.
Oh, that's awesome.
Wow,
oh,
that
man.
Is so cool. Now, that Don, is. you had done some TV work. Can you tell us about it?
Yeah, I worked quite a bit in several areas of television back in the 80s. I was a recording artist at the time, a session player. And if anybody remembers the Gary Coleman movies, he made about six of them for television, you know, special night TV or whatever. It'd be like HBO movie today or whatever. You know, the Apple Dumpling Gang TV, the movies, the Disney movies. What are the other ones? Private Benjamin, Protocol. I was playing music. I was hired to come in and play solo clarinet for those. So if you watch any of those movies, you're going to be, you hear a clarinet, that's me playing those things. It's fun and tech. And then I did some gun handling for them to be sure people didn't get killed with those dumbass blanks because people didn't know how to handle it. So I'm very, very strict though, about guns. I was the range master at Prado, the Olympic range, and I shot international competition and self-defense shooting as well. And so I handled that stuff pretty carefully, and from there, I ended up doing some choreography for some people and set up a few commercials, and eventually that got me to assist Jay Leno with one of his shows when Steven Seagal had a movie come out. I was there to work with him and demonstrating some martial arts, and eventually I was featured The Other Side of Victory, which showed a half hour before the Super Bowl, so there's a billion people watching this. And they featured two professional athletes. They featured Arthur Ashe as a tennis player who has since passed away, and myself. So 15 minutes was about him and his career, and then there was the 15-minute segment about me. The cool thing about that show was that I was on the initial one. That was the very first of the series, and so that was kind of neat.
Very
cool. Wow, very cool. But the thing is, people watching those movies, or even if they have to remember those movies, would have to be at least as old as I am.
Yeah, you know how their memories are. They don't remember me much anymore, but for a while there, they did.
Well, you know, they say that memory is the second thing to go in people because they just can't remember what the first one is.
Well, and there's no, yeah, and there's no blue pill for it either, you know. There's nothing in the
store.
One of the things that goes.
I got to tell you, since you started this, I will admit this. Rusty, the other night I was at Don's school, and he said, I've got to take this little pill. And for a minute, I was happy for him.
But what I forgot to tell him, when he looked happy, I got nervous.
then I told his wife, the only reason I use one of those pills anymore is just to keep him rolling out of bed.
Oh, no.
Yeah, that's it, you know. That's horrible. Oh, man. There's people under 30 on this show, you know.
But
I had to take one of my 3 million pills after I had my visit at the hospital. Oh. So, you know, and if I miss them, something happens to me, and then I die. And if I didn't die while I'm fighting, I don't want to die because I forgot to take a pill. That'd be stupid.
Bob.
Well, how do you die? You miss a pill. Yeah. That's not real macho, you know.
I was gonna say, Bob, well, Grandmaster Baird had to take a pill, like, basically to save his life, and I'm like, well, wait a minute. I guess Bob does too. But
No,
she didn't.
Yeah. Wow. You may have hit a sore subject. That's a big subject there. Yeah.
I'm talking in terms of, you know, like it's supposed to be like, oh, in your wife's mind, what's going on? It's like, what?
Exactly.
Oh, God. Okay.
I'm going to slap around tonight. Yeah.
You know I'm kidding, Bob. Come on.
she wasn't laughing at me.
Bob, she's not kidding. I can tell.
Because Blake's on the chat board laughing at me.
That's awesome.
Well,
oh,
she also has the smiley up that's the embarrassed smiley where it turns red.
Oh, yeah.
But yeah, it was the embarrassed smiley first, and then it's the laughing smiley. But
that's the laugh. Well, the other thing that happened, if I can bring it up, if you've got a moment, is that I helped Fred Rogan out a few times, and one time was really important to me, and I don't mind taking a stance on this. I'm very controversial, and always have been, and I've been very controversial about this. Had some tough quotes out there on me on this. I've had people visit the school that weren't pleased. But he called me up one day, and he says, Don, he said, I'm going to come by and I'm going to talk to you. And I said, come on over. And so he came by, and he really looked disturbed. And I go, what's up? Is there any way I can help you? And he said, yes. I want a very particular kind of interview with you, and here's what it's about. Mm-hmm. He had gotten sent footage of 8, 10, 11, 12-year-olds. Now, this is back in the 90s, right, when some of this stuff first came out.
Mm-hmm.
Fighting UFC-style fights.
Whoa.
And state were not enforcing any laws whatsoever. These fights were being held. And the tapes, I got a chance to see the tapes, which I did not want to see. The tapes were brutal. The kids hitting each other with everything they had, throwing the floor, beating their heads, in. It was just.
Oh, my gosh.
Just terrible. Wow. And I was in tears, and Fred showed this to me. And he says, I want to try to start something. And I said, well, you came to the right place. What would you like me to do? He says, well, I want to film this interesting. I want you to get the parents of your children and bring them to your school. We'll bring all the gear to your school. We're going to bring a television monitor. And I want to play tape raw for the parents without telling them what it was ever about. We'll just tell them you've got a television thing. And would they like to participate? And I want the raw reactions of the parents. And I said, wow, that's hardcore. That's just down my line. Let's do it. So he brought his entire crew. He brought the tape. And he set it up so that I could be on a stool for an interview with him, next to him. And he had a camera on the audience. I could see the monitor as well. And he played it. And this was live on the Fred Rogan Show. Right. This is for the Fred Rogan Show. I think it was taped earlier and then played like that. Okay. So he played it, and they have a monitor on me, Fred and I, and they had the monitor on them, and so they cut that in and showed their reaction and my reaction and Fred's and their reaction back, and that's how it was being taped, and every one of the parents just, I thought they were going to puke. I don't believe this. This is what country is this in? Who's doing this? That they were a couple of the parents were wailing, actually just broke out in disbelief tears. Mm-hmm. And then they began to, they started talking to me and they interviewed me, and I told them, I said, I will go on the road. I will dedicate the rest of my life, whatever you want. I will never stop saying that's the worst thing I've ever seen in my life. That's the thing I've ever seen that this country allows. I am completely, and everybody knows me, I'm completely and adamantly against UFC-style fights with 12-year-olds.
Yeah.
And that's,
my God.
That's probably my most significant television interview interplay with a host.
Whoa. What's more disturbing is that these kids' parents allowed it. They signed something to allow their kids to go out on a wail on each other and smash their faces
yelling,
up against
them. Kill them, beat them.
That's crazy. Oh, my gosh.
Until you've seen something like, this is back east, this is, it was unbelievable. Until you've seen that, you don't really know what you're looking at and think it's really cool. But when you realize you know, I don't think it's really cool, but I mean, everybody thinks it's cool. Hey, look, look, the kids fight. This is fun. They're yelling, screaming, eating popcorn. The kids are beating themselves up. And everybody thought it was cool, right? It was unbelievable. It wasn't cool. And, of course, the Fred Rogan show showed this interview nationwide 5 times. And I got phone calls that would shock you. I had people visit the school that threatened me. There was all this stuff because they I don't know what they're going after. You know, if you want to be an adult and go get in a fight, that again, you know, that's up to the adult. Anybody 18 and over and they're fighting in a ring, that's up to them. That's their profession, not my business. I don't comment on it. But when you have a 10-year-old laying on the in a ring on the canvas, pinned, well, somebody hit him 4 or 5 times, the lazy referee, because he wants to be exciting. There's something wrong with our culture.
That's it's barbaric. And to think that the parents
it
not
still goes
only,
on, by the way.
It still goes on. That's crazy.
Yeah,
it's
never stopped.
Well, you know, what's disturbing also is that, you know, you get, you know, these young preteen people that are watching this or hear about it. They go and watch it or they, you know, see it on YouTube or whatever. Yeah. And they think, wow, this is my ticket to the UFC. And they come into these kind of fights with, you know, these pipe dreams and I'm going to be a star because that's how kids think. I'm going to be a great fighter. I'm going to be a star. You're not going to be a star when you're an adult if at 12 years old you're fighting and you're too injured beyond repair by the time you're 18. And it'll happen. And they don't understand it. And the parents, it just makes me want to vomit.
Well, the thing about contact in juniors, that's real important, and I try it in seminars I give and stuff, and how to teach kids and stuff, is that the bones in the skull, they're not formed, they're not tight. The bones in the hands aren't formed completely when they're younger. They shouldn't be breaking boards and hitting bricks like they're doing. All these things are really unsafe, and the brain itself, the architecture of the brain, the chemical architecture hasn't completed itself. There are doors and windows of the brain that don't open until you hit 15 or 16. Different types of cognizance, different types of reception of perspective, interpretation of what's going on in your environment. There's a lot of things that aren't there that open gradually in the brain. The brain gradually unfolds, and you can see it just like a child. It's just not education. And there's hormones going on. There's chemistry going on. There's body being developed. There's bones that are growing. There's all these things. The interiority of the human being is complex, and they're all developing, clear into their teen. And like if you fall off of something, hit your head, there are things about the brain that you won't discover that went wrong until those doors don't open when they're 15. And you go, wow. My kid has a learning disorder. My kid has a concentration problem. My kid has a perception problem. He has an observation problem. How'd that ever happen? It must be a birth defect. Well, now they've related it back to getting hit in the head and banging your head on stuff, and children have some of these injuries. You can't hit kids at all. Their hands should not hit anything hard. Their face should not be hit hard. Their skull shouldn't be hit hard. Their brain cannot be hit hard. It needs to develop more. I mean, I love Muhammad Ali, but do we want 15-year-old kids in that position before they're his age? We don't.
Exactly.
And
exactly.
So I'm still on the bandwagon. Sorry to take over your show.
Oh, no. I mean, it needs to be put out there because, it needs to be addressed because I agree. You know, kids that young are still growing and developing don't need to get like hit with the same amount of force that boxers get hit or professional
UFC fighters get hit. Yeah.
Or stomped in the head. Yeah, because pound for pound, those kids can dish out the same amount of power with each other, and that's crazy.
But actually, more. My experiments over the years have shown that a kid can deliver a lot more power than he can take. And there lies the greatest danger. In particular, the solar plexus, abdomen, or liver, as hard as they get, they're still mushy. But when you teach them how to punch properly, and you get the elbow lined up, and you get the hips moving, and they shift their weight just right, they deliver way more power than their bodies can take. Way more. The adults have a way to make up for some of that, and they can take a lot of power, but not all of it. They've got to dissipate some of it through the way they think or the way they rotate. But children, they're so vulnerable. Just a little punch actually can put a kid in the death row.
Wow. And this is still going on. I can't believe it is.
It still does. And then the message is, and you can go to YouTube and see this, but the message is like, wow, that looks really cool. So let's try that in the backyard. Now you get 10 and 12 and 11 year olds when mommy's gone, and they have these fist fights in the backyard.
Yeah, exactly.
Because they're pretending to have UFC. But they don't have any doctors there. They don't have coaches. They don't have any equipment. They just go, they start fighting. They hit each other. Wow, this is cool. I've seen some awful things on YouTube. And, and I'm like, oh, my gosh. I wish they weren't doing that. I wish they would find a nice dojo to train at. A lot of the schools have gotten very smart about this, and they're wearing headgear, and they're wearing safety equipment, and, you know, they're having the juniors fight the tournaments, and they're not allowing them to hit the headgear. And there's a lot of people that are proactive in this. So we're not alone. I would say the majority of responsible martial artists are really looking towards safety.
Yes.
But this other thing is still out there. And it's a shame.
Unbelievable. Mm. Unbelievable.
Wow.
Yeah. Well, we've got about 20 minutes left in our live broadcast, and I do want to ask a little bit about the recent books that you've written. Can you tell our listeners a little bit about some of your books?
Sure. I've written back in the 80s, we wrote one called Transcend the Void, and that was 86. That's not really recent, but it did well. And then moving in today, I have, in the last couple of years, I've written Haiku Wisdom, As the Crow Flies, Sudoquan, the story of Mr. Su in his own words through his philosophies, and I'm working on a haiku book right now, and another one, which I have in mind, I'm just kind of getting it going, but Haiku Wisdom is my first one of my recent writings, and it's an interesting concept because what it was, it's a book about Kung Fu wisdom. Its subtitle is Living the Principles and Philosophies of Kung Fu, Haiku, and Nature. So haiku are kind of poems about the Tao, the way things work, the interactivities of nature, the comings and goings through life and death, right? And haiku kind of addresses a lot of that historically in Japan. And then Kung Fu also has these quaint and obviously wonderful, rich philosophies that are just things to live by. And so what I did is that Haiku Wisdom is a book of, it's got 12 chapters that deal with martial art philosophy and life philosophy and Taoism and the touch of Buddhist thought. But it's surrounded, kind of seasoned by these poems. But if you take a second and read the poems, you'll realize that the poems actually, with your creativity involved, the poems are chapters too. I just used the fewest words and left it up to the reader to determine what the most words were.
Very cool.
And so, let the reader, so it's a poetry book where the reader's got to take part, got to be active. What does this mean? This guy wrote this book. Look at these philosophies. Look at what he said. Now he just left this poem stand alone. There must be some reason he put it in the book. What is it? And that gives people practice in pondering hints that nature has, how to learn from nature, how to learn from the activity of nature, and how to integrate with nature and humanity combined in a better, smoother way. And then As the Crow Flies, it's the same thing. As the Crow Flies is really haiku wisdom too. It's a poetic journey of wisdom. And again, it's a mix it's a mix between poetry and philosophy. I'll read one quickly.
Okay,
excess please. Stubbornness. Yeah, excess stubbornness is damaging to one's energetic system. Qi. It blocks, not opens the gates to excellent health. Being tenacious is one thing. Being stubborn is another. One keeps you alive. The other slaughters you eventually. Surrendering yourself and wanting the very best for all those you come across empowers your chi, opens the gates to vitality. So there's a lesson that I taught my students at one time years ago. And that gives somebody something to ponder, this difference between stubbornness and tenacity.
Mm-hmm.
Stubborn is this person that will not serve the teacher. Tenacious means the student understood the teacher and was tenacious about practicing it to master what the teacher guided him to do. And so there's a difference between being stubborn. You're not staying in, I'm not going to stay in martial arts because I'm stubborn. I'm staying in martial arts because I'm tenacious. And it's real important to understand what words mean. So I teach the students what words mean when I'm using them. And then one of the poems is Global Warming. The seal's voice also lost at sea. What does that mean? Global warming. The seal's voice also lost at sea. And I could write a humongous, I could write a book on that alone. And so I, on one, I kind of explain what it's about in there, one chapter. And then the other one, it's just a poem standalone. And the person's just supposed to see if that poem hits their soul and enlightens them. And if it doesn't, move on. Another poem will. Not every poem hits everybody. I could read a different poem and maybe it would just, it would be stunning, you know, or just be an incredible image. And it just makes you think about nature, like summer thirst, sunlight splashes from my hands.
Wow.
And that brings you to this moment where wow, you're drinking water of your hands and the water splashing back to the pond and it's the sunlit, backlit, and it's just, you know, you're on a hike. It's, there's, you can go on and on and on what the event was that brought this poem about. And what it's to do is the idea of this poem is to help my students reconnect to the Tao, reconnect to the nature and her ways and her beauty, because the Garden of Eden has been filled in, unless we develop a psychological one.
Very cool.
Wow.
Very cool. Oh, it's funny. Maria on the chat board goes, it's funny, I never see him writing, then poof, here comes a book.
Yeah.
Ninja writer.
You know, it's funny, I practice clarinet by accident. I train martial arts by accident. I write by accident. I never do anything, but everything gets done. So it's just kind of a weird thing about me.
You know, I wish I had that skill because Bob has been egging me on. He's like, when are you going to get that book done? And I'm like, ah, when am I going to have time?
Well, actually, during
I'm
going to
start calling you.
Bring that up.
What's that?
You were?
I was going to bring that up, yes.
It's up. Let's talk about it.
Now that we're talking about it.
Don, she is an absolute procrastinator. She wants to do seminar circuits. She wants to write a book. And I keep on her about it. And I'm just, I'm 1,000 miles away from her. I can't keep on about her too much.
I have heard about 100 words a day, just 100. Just 100, right? Mm-hmm. I heard someone go, just try 100 words a day. Anytime you're near like a tablet or something, just, you know, write it. It's just like 100 words, you know? And I thought about it and I went,
Well, Don had a stroke, was half paralyzed, and wrote a book in 5 days.
I know, right? I was like, you know, that's what Maria was saying too on the chat board. I'm like, holy crap, you know? That's amazing.
Oh, man.
That's absolutely amazing. And I'm like, well, you know, I hopefully I won't need to, you know, go to the hospital to write a book, but you know, that just gives me that kick in the pants to be able to go, you know what?
The thing is that I think it's this, that because of clarinet, piano going back to four, but I only played it for a second, and then I got rid of it, and then I came back to it way, way later, like just 10, 15, 20, 10 years ago or something. But I was exposed to music at four, and then I played clarinet at eight, and then I started, I started training with a friend of mine in 62 with judo and jiu-jitsu, and I took tennis lessons, and I was playing some tennis tournaments and stuff and having some fun. But I've always sought out a mentor. So in anything that I do, but it really comes down to martial arts as being our mentor, the main mentor, in that, you basically what you want to do, what any author wants to do, is go from not having a book to having a book.
Mm-hmm.
And that's like going from white belt to master with nothing in between.
Mm-hmm.
And no one understands about going from white belt to black belt and writing a book, because nobody spent hours and hours and hours training for yellow belt, orange belt, blue belt, green belt, brown belt, red belt, black belt one, black belt two, or the sash this, right? You didn't do that. You want to, everybody that wants to write a book or write music or play an instrument that's trained martial arts, they have the hardest time because I'm not saying you did, I'm not implying it. I'm just saying that very often people forget to apply the principles that martial arts taught them about learning martial arts and realizing that the principles that you learned about martial arts are the same ones that apply to every single thing else.
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
You've got to go from white to yellow. Yellow to orange. Well, what is a yellow belt writer? What is an orange belt writer?
Oh.
And some people do this quickly. They get the hang of that. They get the hang of this. They get the hang of structure. Other people, they don't. They're trying to use like an old 60s outline, capital one, capital double two, Roman symbol two, A, B, C. Then they're going to try and create this outline. They're going to follow this outline. And a really creative mind like mine, that's really ADD, ADHD, ABCD, double D, TVS, 36221. That's my mind.
Mm-hmm.
I have things with my mind they haven't even studied yet, you see? And I can't operate from something so mathematical. I've got to operate my creative realm with a creative approach. And martial arts has a tremendous amount of discipline that teaches you that stick-to-itiveness, right?
Mm-hmm.
Where you're gonna persist through. But at the same token, there's always these things we discover. There's always the things that the instructor says us do wrong. There's the things the instructor sees that we're just trying to create, we're trying to inspire, because much of our martial arts is actually learned through our creative force, not just taking orders.
Mm-hmm.
When it comes down to it, and you're in a death match in an alley somewhere, you need to be really creative. Hello?
Hello?
Oh, that was weird.
Hello?
That was weird.
That's weird. Nobody's dialing me.
No, let's let me double check here. Let's see. That was weird. Hello? What happened? What happened? That was weird. We lost Bob, and we lost... Oh, what happened? I don't know what happened there. Let's see here. Let's see if we can call Bob again. Well, let's call Master Baird first, because I have no idea what happened there. All right, I think
I'm back.
I have no idea what happened. You ended up calling my phone, Bob, and then
I don't know how. There we go.
Yeah, there we go. So you ended up calling my phone. And
I did. It was really weird. So I do have a story to share. You know, I started with Master Baird about 4 years ago before my back went south on me.
I think we lost Master Baird too. But he's back on, I believe. But I can't pull up his channel because it's blank.
Donnie,
I don't know
with
why.
It? I'll call him back real quick, Rusty. He just left us.
Okay. Yeah.
I'll go in the green room.
Okay. Call failed or not answered. No, we'll call him live. Let's see here. Okay. Sorry about the technical difficulties, folks. But let's, I think Bob is bringing him back on. Let's see here. Come back, Bob.
That was unusual.
Where did we go?
That was weird. I don't know. Because, like, you ended up calling my phone, and I'm pretty sure that it can be heard in the background for people listening. My phone started ringing, and I was like, what's good? Why is Bob calling me?
Yeah.
Because I'm an idiot.
And then
I should have known.
Should have known it was my fault. Absolutely.
Oh,
no,
man.
I have a real quick story to share because we do have a call.
Oh.
Actually, the caller is just listening.
Okay.
Okay.
When I started at Don's school about 4 years ago until my back went out, so I only lasted a month until I couldn't train any longer. Well, my first day, my agreement with Don and Maria was that I wasn't going to wear a belt. And Don said, fine, don't wear any uniform, because I wasn't going to walk into somebody stranger with a 6-degree black belt on.
Mm-hmm.
And, well, I hope this student isn't listening, because this student, we were doing front kicks on a kicking shield. Well, everybody was going through. I was, like, last in line. Well, I kicked it. I launched your student into your brick wall.
Not nice.
That's not nice.
That's not nice. That's hard on the brick wall.
I know. And I do not think to this day that student's talking to me.
Yeah. Man, that's unbelievable. That's why I had to repaint that area.
Bad Bob. Maria says, bad Bob. Bad Bob.
Bad Bob, yeah.
Bad
Jeez.
Bob. But apparently whatever anomaly that happened on the on my board happened also with the chat board, because everyone got pushed out for a second. And,
oh, no.
Yeah, that was weird. But we're back now. And unfortunately, we have about only 2 minutes to our live feed. So if anyone out there wants to come visit or perhaps study with you, if they're going to visit the Burbank area, how can they get a hold of you?
Yes, the American School of Martial Arts at 818-843-3403. Just give a call and come on by and try it out.
Very cool. Awesome. Well, thank you so much for joining us this evening and taking time out of your schedule. It was a wonderful conversation. We had a great time and great advice also, not only for for how to study and how to think about your study, but also, you know, in terms of anything, and the advice on, you know, how to approach things like writing a book, that you can't just
writing
I'm going to do it. Yeah,
that it
is a process as opposed to poof,
it
here
is.
We go. You need that practice
exactly
to be able
right.
to go poof. Here's a book.
That's it.
All righty. Well, again, thank you so much.
Well, thank you very
and
much.
And I hope to see you next time I'm out there in Burbank.
That would be terrific. Drop by anytime.
Thank you so much.
Oh,
have a great weekend now.
Bye-bye.
Okay.
Bye.
See you guys.
All
righty.
What a
and
great show.
I know. What a great show. And next week, we're still trying to figure out what we're going to have for next week. I'm going to be out of town, but Sifu Bob's going to be around. And just look at the Dynamic Dojo Facebook page to see what next week's subject is going to be. So we'll talk to everyone next week. Bye-bye now.
Okay, bye-bye.